1460 WVOX.
Whitney Media 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX AM 1460. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I'm the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound, and it can be heard live streaming worldwide on WVOX.com. One can also call directly to the station at 914-636-0110, but please stay germane to our topic. My guest today is author John Loftus, and our subject is Nazis in America and how they got here. He's the author also of many books, including The Secret War Against the Jews. As I say each week, the mission of The Advocates is to bring to the public different views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. To that end, many of my shows are devoted to that purpose, and certainly one of the public policy issues of America is to keep out international criminals, and the greatest international criminals have to be the Nazis, certainly. Welcome, John Loftus, to The Advocates, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Richard.
My pleasure. You know, John Loftus is a former Army officer, a federal prosecutor, a noted historian. He's included among the few who have ever had cosmic security clearances, including code word NATO and nuclear top secrets. For decades, he has worked without pay as an attorney to help other law-abiding intelligence agents blow the whistle on government corruption. He's the author of seven books, two which were international bestsellers, and one was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. He's a graduate of Boston College, right up the road from my alma mater, Boston University, a few years after me. And we had some great hockey rivals, as everybody knows, and I'm pretty sure I don't know whether the old coach was there by when you were there, but we had some great times up at BC. He's a graduate of Suffolk University Law School. He served in the U.S. Army. He attained the rank of first lieutenant. He began working for the U.S. Department of Justice in 1977, joined their Office of Special Investigations, and was charged with prosecuting and deporting Nazi war criminals in the U.S. His 60 Minutes expose of Nazi war criminals working for U.S. intelligence won the 1982 Emmy Award for Outstanding Investigative Journalism. Since then, he's been a frequent intelligence contributor for network television shows on CNN, ABC, Fox. Several of his books have been made into television movies. American Secrets, a documentary film about his research into America's finest families who funded Hitler, will soon be released in movie theaters nationwide. Now that the classification clock has expired after 30 years, in other words, what can be talked about? Mr. Loftus' most recent book, American's Nazi Secret, reveals for the first time what the U.S. Justice Department has been censoring from the view of the American people. He rips the lid off U.S. connection to the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and other Middle Eastern terrorist groups. He currently lives in warm St. Petersburg, Florida, writes a weekly intelligence column for SpyView, for AMI magazine in New York. He's the president of the International Intelligence Summit and the past president, first Irish Catholic, I must note, president of the Florida Holocaust Museum. You've had a full life already, and you've got a lot to go, John, I hope.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting life, but in ancient China, it was a curse to wear someone to live in interesting times, and Now I know what they mean.
Right. You know, in November of 2010, a Justice Department report offered new evidence that the United States created a safe haven in America for Nazis and their collaborators following the end of World War II. The New York Times reports and talks about this, and a 600-page report, which the Justice Department has reportedly tried to keep secret, describes the roles of lawyers, historians, investigators at the agency of Office of Special Investigations in pursuing the most notorious Nazi cases of the past 30 years. The Justice Department report, which the agency reportedly resisted making public since 2006, describes what it calls government's collaboration with persecutors. It goes on to say that investigators learned some war criminals were indeed knowingly granted entry into the U.S. despite the fact that government officials knew of their past histories. John, you are the author of The Secret War Against the Jews and an expert on Nazis in America. How did they get here after World War II?
The British Secret Service dumped them here. They told us they were going to be anti-communist freedom fighters and that we'd have an underground army behind Russian lines in case World War III broke out. And all the British wanted us to do was let these guys live secretly in America where they could be trained and rearmed. And, you know, the nitwits in our State Department, the Dulles brothers, bought the story. And against the orders of President Truman, and utterly illegally against a ban and against Nazi immigration set by Congress, these guys in the State Department collaborated with the British Secret Service to relocate the Nazis. Now, the tragedy in all this was that the British officer in charge of moving the Nazis to America was Kim Philby.
Communist traitor.
Right. Highest-ranking communist agent perhaps ever to penetrate the British Secret Service. His orders from Moscow was he wasn't selling America anti-communist freedom fighters. He was sending us the dregs of the Nazi war criminals, the people who had actually carried out the Holocaust in Eastern Europe, the ones with the blood in their hands, because the Russians then could blackmail them as they worked their way inside American intelligence to reveal American secrets. One CIA report I read said that 98% of the people we parachuted behind Russian anti-communist lines during the Cold War were caught and killed. The Nazis sold us out. They sold out every secret we had.
Sure, no question about it. Let me ask you a question, and this is different from the group we generally know about, who were the Wernher von Braun V2, V1 scientists who were brought here.
Yeah, it's an urban legend that we only got the scientists. First of all, we only got the bad scientists. The good scientists were picked off by Kim Philby's buddy, Donald McLean, and sent to Moscow. That's why the Russians, to this day, have a better rocket program than we do. We only got the bureaucrats, the guys that, arranged the money from the Third Reich. The real scientists went to Moscow.
You know, most of Americans of a certain age are well aware of the Holocaust, Nazi crimes, the Nuremberg trials, and denazification courts in Europe and Germany after World War II. Many of us are aware of the trials of collaborators in all occupied Europe, from Vidkun Quisling in Norway to Pétain, Laval in France to scores of others in Eastern and Western Europe. What was the result of these trials, and why did American interest in pursuing Nazis wane in the late 1940s?
Well, part of it was that we just wanted to have the boys come home and forget World War II and move on with our past. Americans are, I hate to say it, a little bit lazy about politics and about their own history. A week is ancient history to Americans. In many ways, it's a good thing, but it has some bad results. As the rise of communism, people like the Dulles brothers began to believe that perhaps, here was the easy answer. We take over these Nazi groups that fought the Russians during World War II. They have expertise where we have none. The British say that these people are terrific. And so we started bringing them in. A lot of them had already been waiting up on the borders in Canada, so it was an easy thing for them to cross the border and come in.
Right, and of course you're referring to John Foster Dulles, who was in the State Department, later became Secretary of State under Dwight David Eisenhower, and his brother Alan Dulles, who was super spy in Zurich during the war and the first head of the CIA. We'll get into him a little bit later. You know, many historians attribute this change in attitudes to the coming Cold War threat from the Soviet Union, which you mentioned. But there was abundant evidence that there was great support for Nazi Germany before the war, which stemmed from many sources. The American First Movement, anti-British Americans, possibly IRA people, business interests connected to American-German trade, and Americans of German heritage. A lot of people forget that 40% of Americans in the 1930 census had German blood. They were the largest ethnic group in the United States. Before our break, John, how important were these factors to post-war American thinking?
Very much so. I mean, some of America's finest families funded Hitler. I guess we'll talk about that a little bit later. American business had huge investments in Germany. In fact, one of the causes of the Great Depression of the 30s was that in the late 1920s, American business, the Wall Street crowd, moved their investments to buy up corporations in Germany. And the German-American public followed. In fact, the German-American public sort of not infected, but transferred their ideas to the American public. By 1939, 49% of the American public were in favor of Nuremberg-type laws that would prohibit American Jews from owning real estate in America. Lindbergh, Father Coughlin, all the great bigots of that time. I think that there was a number of factors that wanted us to turn a blind eye to the problems of Nazism in Germany during the Cold War, do whatever we have to do to beat the Russians. And we had a simplistic attitude that we paid for later.
Well,
you know, we put all the Japanese in concentration camps in America during World War II, but not the Germans on the East Coast.
Well,
and they were far more affiliated to the Axis than the Japanese Americans ever were.
And, you know, it's very interesting that students of history will realize that in the 1920s there was a huge revisionist movement regarding the guilt of German militarism in the First World War. And a tremendous reaction to our anti-German feeling. German was removed from the schools. Frankfurters were called hot dogs. People Americanized their German names. There was a tremendous revisionism of historians, too, in the 20s. And it seems that the German population, this pro-totalitarian population, not all Germans by no sense, sort of learned their lesson after First World War. You know, we're coming up against a commercial break. My guest is John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer, and federal prosecutor. And our subject is Nazis in America, how they got here. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM and live streaming at WVOX.com. And we'll have to go, we'll go to a financial news update in a few seconds. But as I just want to reiterate, you know, my point before we go to the break, that this revisionist thinking, you know, accused the Allies of the similar crimes that the Germans did. And it was a very interesting situation. We'll be back in a moment with John Loftus.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, stocks are trading in positive territory. Investors are weighing signs that Germany could slide into a recession against optimism that the International Monetary Fund will be able to raise additional money to help stabilize Europe's debt crisis. At noon Eastern, the Dow Industrials were up roughly 45 points. Shares of Yahoo are rallying today. After the closing bell Tuesday, Jerry Yang, the founder of Yahoo, resigned from the company he helped to start in 1995. His departure is seen as clearing the way for a sale of Yahoo's valuable Asian assets. And Citigroup has agreed to pay $725,000 for not disclosing conflicts of interest in the bank's research division. FINRA, an industry regulator, says Citigroup Global Markets did not tell investors that it was paid for services to some companies in reports that it published between January 2007 and March 2010. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Adam Shapiro.
Congratulations, the job is yours. It felt good to say those words when I hired my first employee, but it was soon followed by, how does a single paycheck generate a mountain of paperwork? Then Lyle, my accountant, said, let's just get Intuit Payroll. It'll make both our lives easier. So I got Intuit Payroll, and now I pay my employees and file tax forms in just a few minutes. And Lyle says things like, you are the payroll queen.
Get a 30-day free trial and learn why over a million small businesses use Intuit Payroll at payroll.com.
You're listening to America's great community radio station from Westchester, the Golden Apple. This is WVOX Worldwide, AM 1460 and WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Now,
back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM and live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest, John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer, and federal prosecutor, and our subject is Nazis America, How Did They Get Here? And his book, The Secret War Against the Jews. You're listening to The Advocates, of course. Before the break, I asked John Loftus about the American support for Nazi cause, which existed before World War II. John, what was the German-American Bund? Who was Fritz Kuhn, and what happened at Madison Square Garden?
The German-American Bund was an organization of those Germans living in America who supported the Third Reich and, you know, a little bit of nationalism there. And mostly it was used to sell war bonds. Remember that there was a difficulty with getting American money out of Germany. So, you know, German-Americans could buy bonds and invest them in Germany, but that was as far as it went. But there was a huge amount of people in America who were pro-Nazi. Among them, Northern New Jersey, for example, had summer camps where kids could go to Nazi summer camps and actually, you know, attend Nazi rallies at Madison Square Garden. You know, before the famous Jewish rally at Madison Square Garden, there were Nazi rallies there. It was an occasion where, you know, polite people didn't call it Nazism or fascism. They called it corporatism. You know, that society should not be run by the unruly mob of democracy, but by the elite few, primarily businessmen and, you know, who would choose politicians, the men of destiny.
Yeah. Who was Fritz Kuhn?
Well, he was sort of the organizer of this in America. In fact, you know, he just reminded me, I had read all the classified files of Nazi activities in the United States before World War II. And I was absolutely shocked at the number of famous Americans. We had 13 congressmen, two senators, that were actually on the Nazi payroll in America.
I think John L. Lewis, too, was paid for before to endorse the Republicans.
Father Coughlin. The embarrasses me as a Roman Catholic, but there was this horrible priest who was a radio personality and one of the worst bigots in America, and he was a paid Nazi agent.
You know, John, the Justice Department started to take notice of these activities, and there were many Americans opposed to the rise of Hitler in Germany. Their persecution of Jews, their totalitarian threat was well chronicled. But even after the German invasion of Poland and the start of World War II, most Americans were still isolationists. In fact, up to the last Gallup poll of November of 1941, 90% of all Americans would not support a declaration of war against Germany to save Great Britain. How much of this was due to the fear of war, war being greater than the fear of Nazi-dominated Europe and Russia? Or, basically, was Nazis seen as a counterbalance to Stalin and the Soviets?
That was a big argument, that, you know, we needed a Nazi Europe, a fortress Europe, as Hitler called it, to withstand the onslaught of communism, which was the big boogeyman. But I think the primary attitude among Americans was indifference. They just didn't want to get involved in another war in Europe. That apathy forced Roosevelt, who was a tremendous supporter of England, to do a lot of things covertly. We were training agents in Canada in the support Britain in the event of war. We allowed the British Secret Service to take over a floor of the Empire State Building to bug Nelson Rockefeller and the Dulles brothers who were above them.
Stevenson, right?
So
he was the super spy.
Not so much a super spy. Stevenson was one of those guys who sort of supported the idea of the Nazis being Fortress Europe. Very mixed bag on Stevenson.
No, I'm talking about the British spy, Stevenson.
I am, too.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Sir William Stevenson.
Oh, Williamson,
you're
right.
After World War II, he was on the board of a corporation, along with Bill Donovan, that laundered Nazi flight money back from South America back to Germany. So, you know, he has feet of clay. He wasn't the great war hero. Certainly he was a man who helped push for a centralized intelligence service. But his own politics were not above suspicion.
Yeah. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was an Anglophile, had a lifetime distaste for German militarism. After Germany declared war on the United States in the wake of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, there was an immediate change in America amongst many Americans, obviously, in being patriotic. What happened to the German aliens in the United States, and how did German Americans generally react to the upcoming war?
You know, it was the German Americans tried to prove their loyalty. They enlisted, but there was a great deal of animosity towards Germany and first-generation German Americans. If you spoke with a German accent, you were very suspect in the United States. And but German Americans eventually were allowed to enlist. But ironically, we used preferred Jewish German Americans as our translators and intelligence suspects. And that led to an amazing era where we had a huge number of Jews in the American intelligence service.
Now, you know, talking about, and I know we're not getting into this too much on immigration, though, there's a tremendous amount of opposition to Jewish immigration, even filling the quotas before World War II. Where did this emanate from, and how did the infiltration of German thinking and Nazi thinking affect Americans in this country towards Jews?
I think that the German propaganda in America was stunning. There was a friend of mine was actually America's oldest spy against the Nazis. He infiltrated the Nazi Bund at the Ford Motor Plants and had his picture taken and given the Hitler salute with, what do they call them, the silver shirts.
Yeah, silver shirts, yeah.
Yep, and so the Nazis were extremely active. There was a period of neutrality where they were caught. There was a big discussion about, you know, how far it would go. But the Nazis had far more influence in America than Roosevelt did with his own Congress to bring Jews into the United States.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is, of course, an unknown part of the story of German influence, not only in the United States, but all in Cuba, all over South America, infiltrating governments, creating public policy, certainly elevating the level of anti-Semitism from cousins to cousins, and with this large German population. We have to go to a commercial break. My guest is John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer and federal prosecutor. Subject is Nazi in America, how they got here. You're listening to Advocates on WVOX 1460, live streaming on WVOX.com. And we'll be back in a moment or so and talk more about the Dutch connection.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. President Obama had been delaying a decision on approving an oil pipeline from Canada to Texas. Now, oil industry sources tell Fox that answer is no. Washington's Republican Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers just this morning.
This is a project that has bipartisan support, would create up to 100,000 jobs.
There have been concerns, though, about the pipeline running through a water supply in Nebraska. It's possible it could be rerouted. Some websites down today as a protest against two bills in Congress restricting internet traffic.
They would give the Justice Department the power to force search engines to block sites deemed online pirates and forbid payment processors from doing business with them. This weekend, the White House voiced opposition to the bills in their current form. For the record, Fox News Radio parent company News Corp supports the legislation.
Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 76 points, manufacturing up the most in a year. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Today's Whitney Media public service broadcasts are brought to you by the attorneys at Silva Thomas, the fast-growing family law firm with new offices in Manhattan, Westchester, and Long Island. Headed by the distinguished and highly respected attorney Michelle Silva, the new Silva Thomas law firm brings a refreshing and compassionate understanding to a most difficult area of the law. The Silva Thomas lawyers know well that divorce and the litigation that often goes with it brings a bewildering array of legal and emotional concerns. That's why this unique family law firm, admired by judges, legal experts, and their colleagues at the bar, is always very much aware of your goals, your objectives, and your overall life situation. Everyone is different, and understanding that is what makes Silva Thomas a standout in their field. That's what sets them apart. Divorce, separation, child support, and the all-important financial picture require not only the expertise Michelle Silva Thomas has gained in many years of distinguished practice in matrimonial law, but also, again, that keen understanding, which is uniquely hers. Michelle Silva Thomas can go over and review your options and the important choices facing you and your family at the new Silva Thomas office at 340 Madison Avenue near Grand Central, or at the Silva Thomas offices in the heart of downtown White Plains or on Long Island. Respected by other attorneys and by the judiciary, Michelle Silva's new firm, Silva Thomas, is a great resource when life turns sad and difficult on the home front. Now at 340 Madison, 212-920-6464. Silva Thomas PC, great lawyers who really understand. In Manhattan, 212-920-6464.
There are quite a number of neighborhood flower shops around Westchester County these days. As in all things, some are better than others. And in the Colonial Village Shopping Center on Weaver Street in Scarsdale, just to the north of New Rochelle, there exists a florist of very great style and renown. Colonial Village Flowers specializes in beautiful seasonal flowers arranged in good taste, with the lovely low-key result that all Colonial Village presentations, bouquets, and arrangements look like they were actually grown, collected, and gathered in the natural setting of your own garden. Good taste in flowers has for years been a special trademark of Joe Ward and his talented floral arrangers at Colonial Village, featuring the natural look without pomp or ceremony. So please, know that there is at least one flower shop on your classy wavelength. Joe Ward's Colonial Village Flowers at 1515 Weaver Street in Scarsdale. Call 723-2888. That's 723-2 3/8.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagill walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, it's Minuteman Press down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast Westchester County and the vicinity for this afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, windy conditions, early highs will climb close to 40, then fall to 30s later this afternoon. Partly to mostly clear this evening, overnight lows dropping close to 20, mostly sunny highs into the middle 30s on Thursday, increasing clouds, could be some snow showers Thursday night, then becoming mostly sunny on Friday into the middle 30s, increasing clouds once again Friday evening, chance of a period of light snow on Saturday into the upper 30s, partly to mostly cloudy middle 40s Sunday. Steve Pelletieri Jr. reporting for WVOX Worldwide, WVIPHT.
Go global on WVOX.com. Call David O'Shaughnessy for more information.
914-636-1460.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates on WVOX. 1460 AM, live streaming on WVOX.com with my guest, John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer, federal prosecutor, and our subject is Nazis in America, how they got here. You wrote an interesting article in 2002 called The Dutch Connection, of how a famous American family made its fortune from the Nazis. And, of course, this link will be on my website regarding this show. Who is this family, and what is the connection, John?
Well, the interesting part was that a friend of mine from the intelligence service, Bill Gowan of New York, had a friend from the Dutch intelligence service who told him this remarkable story. Gowan got affidavits. We kept investigating, and the story kept checking out. Prior to World War II, even going back as far as the 1920s, the Wall Street investors didn't want to get burned again, you know, as they were in World War I, because their German investments ended up on the wrong side of the war. So they set up a series of bank fronts, one in New York, the Union Bank, one in Holland, the Bank for Shipping and Handling, and one in Berlin, the Thyssen Bank. And the Thyssens were the great steel family that organized, you know, the steel cartel in Germany, and they organized the system with the Dulles brothers. So no matter which side won World War II, the next war, one of the banks would end up being in a neutral country, and they would claim ownership of all the businesses and rescue the business investments from, you know, post-war seizure. And it was a brilliant scheme, and it worked very well, except that right after the war, one of the Dutch bankers discovered to his horror that his bank was a front for Nazis and Nazi flight capitals. And he went to New York City to try and get another bank member to join him. He went to see Prescott Bush, but something went wrong, and this young Dutch banker was found dead of a heart attack on his way to see Bush. A lot of suspicion around that. Prescott Bush, during World War II, had been the front man for his father-in-law, Herbert Walker. Prescott was, how can I put this gently, he was the drunken son-in-law that, you know, the father-in-law, the wealthy man, put Prescott on the boards of several companies to sort of earn a living. And those companies, sadly, were the very ones that were invested in Nazi Germany. And so Prescott was the fall guy, that's all.
So
no one should blame his son or grandsons, two of whom were one of them was president, one was his son. They had nothing to do with Nazism, the same way that Jack Kennedy shouldn't be blamed because his dad bought Nazi stocks.
So you're saying
people
this
should realize is that his father, Joe Kennedy, bought the stocks from Prescott Bush. They went on a ship to Germany together before the war.
So the sins of the father shouldn't be visited on the son.
No.
But unfortunately, that family was involved with that, and much of that has been covered up, wouldn't you say?
Completely covered up. A lot of the obstruction of investigations into Nazi war criminals in America was to protect families like the Bushes. And the Bushes weren't the only ones. There were the Forrestals, the DuPonts. On the American side, of course, we had the elder Joe Kennedy, and the Harrimans.
The Harrimans
were partners with the Bushes.
Right, Brown Brothers Harriman. You know, it's interesting. Alan Dulles, an American super spy and head of the Zurich branch of the OSS during World War II, became head of the CIA after the war. What was the Dulles connection to the Bush-Thyssen Business Association, and how did that and he influence post-war policy?
Well, Alan Dulles was a lawyer, worked for his big brother, a partner in a very famous law firm in New York, and Alan Dulles' clients were the Thyssens and the Rockefellers, and his job was to cloak all these Nazi investments so the American alien property custodian could not seize them under the Trading with the Enemy Act in case World War II broke out and we were at war with Germany. So Alan Dulles' job, by his own files, was to work on our enemy side to hide their assets in America from seizure by the American government.
Mm. Now, you wrote, moving away from this a bit, but it connected to it, I think, The Secret War Against the Jews. And before our break, what did you mean by that title, and how was this all these connections part and parcel to the secret war against the Jews?
Well, it was, you know, America's, the public's, have always been in support of Israel. But for the better part of a century, American intelligence and our State Department have always said, you know, whatever we say about liking the Jews in public, it really is in America's long-term national interest to obtain a cheap and consistent supply of oil. The Arabs have it, the Jews don't. So in every war that Israel has fought, American intelligence fought against it. We helped the Arabs. The secret war against Israel was that all of the Western intelligence services helped the Arabs try and prevent the state of Israel from coming into being and then to crush it once it was formed.
Mm-hmm.
So our intelligence files are just horrible. It's a real example of duplicity. And it was against the will of Congress, against the will of the American people. These guys, quite frankly, worked more for the oil companies and their retirement pension than they ever did for the American government.
Well, it's, you know, and of course this is not new in terms of, as you've stated, it's not new that our passion for oil, our need for it is incredible. We have 6% of the world's population, and we're using 25% of the world's oil. Today, even, there's going to be a controversial decision made by the executive branch on Keystone Energy in terms of the pipeline coming down from Canada. There are all sorts of conflicts in our society. The conflict on the Gulf that's caused deep water drilling as opposed to intercoastal drilling. And everybody complains about it and complains about the difficulty and expense. But half the people in the Gulf Coast depend on agriculture and tourism. And they don't want oil spills, you know? It's funny about this. So this is what one knows in government and public policy as the delicate balance.
Well said. Right. That's exactly what we need.
Right.
More delicate balance.
Right. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with these problems? And, of course, this policy has gone on a long time. We'll see it. It's probably going to go on in the future. We have to go to our final commercial break. My guest is John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer, prosecutor, investigator. And our subject has been Nazis in America and how they got here. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, and live streaming on WVOX.com. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this ongoing subject.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Sources are telling Fox News Radio that the president will say no to a controversial pipeline project. Word is,
the State Department will announce today it is rejecting the Keystone Oil Pipeline that would have brought a new source of Canadian oil into the U.S.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz.
Earlier today, House Speaker John Boehner had urged the White House to approve the project. The
president's got an opportunity to create 100,000 new jobs almost immediately.
But it's expected the administration will argue it does not have enough time to complete environmental studies on a new route for the pipeline through Nebraska. But Republicans say their bill only required the president to decide whether to allow the project or not, not to decide all of its details.
U.S. factory output picking up steam again, giving the economy a boost, surging 15% above its lows of 2.5 years ago. And in southern Afghanistan, 12 killed by a suicide bomber on a motorcycle. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Our community programs are brought to you today by Young and Bartlett, Westchester's leading law firm for negligence, personal injury cases, and medical malpractice. Relying on 55 years of legal experience, partner Francis X. Young and his legendary father before him have been great advocates, recovering millions of dollars for those unfortunate individuals who were injured in any way, including victims of medical malpractice, construction job site accidents, motor vehicle accidents, or defective products. Young and Bartlett are actual trial attorneys who stand right up for you and your rights in the courtroom. Partner Mayo Bartlett of this top-notch firm also specializes in civil rights cases and criminal defense. Calling on his many years as assistant DA under famed crime fighters Carl Vergari and Janine Pirro. Today, Young and Bartlett is at 81 Main Street in White Plains at Lexington, two blocks from Metro North. Attorneys Frank Young and Mayo Bartlett. Two great lawyers, two dedicated advocates. Check them out at young-bartlett.com or by calling 914-285-1500. From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Holy Family Church, Jesse Arnell, J.P. Morgan, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
We've got you surrounded.
On a computer, on a radio.
On your radio and streaming live audio.
Everywhere.
At WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the final segment of The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming on WVOX.com. My guest is John Loftus, the author, noted historian, former Army officer, federal prosecutor. Our subject has been Nazis in America, how they got here. My first question to you this afternoon after the war was, how did Nazis come into the United States? With that in mind, John, how many Nazis escaped into the United States? Are there any figures in it? What level were they in the Nazi machine? How many were discovered and by whom? And are there any left after 66 plus years?
Oh, I don't think there'd be any Nazis left. It'd be in the range of 95 to 100 years old if they were, you know, born in 1922 to 1925. But I think the Nazis have gone, but the cover-up continues. Hmm. When I first went public back in 1982 and said there are Nazis in America and the U.S. intelligence services brought them here, the Justice Department denied it. They said it never happened. Now, the same guy who had headed that unit, Alan Ryan, put out an estimate that as many as 15,000 Nazis entered the United States. And as you mentioned earlier, there was a secret report in the Justice Department admitting that there was a great deal of assistance by the federal government towards the admission of Nazis. And again, that was pretty much the Dulles brothers, not President Truman. They were doing it behind his back.
Mm. Now, what happened? Did those 15,000 assimilate into the American mainstream? Were there any lists or identifications of who these people? Did it ever come out? Or has it been a blanket of silence and no one really knows the actual number and who these names are?
We know who they are because they stayed in organizations that existed back in the Eastern European states. For example, I tracked the Belarusian Nazis by following a particular Belarusian Autocephalous Independent Orthodox Church, a unique religious group that only existed under the Nazis, and found them located in New Jersey and other parts of the country. So it was really easy to trace the Nazis in America or in Canada. Not hard at all. And they did have organizations like the World Anti-Communist League that they would join en masse. When anyone complained about finding a Nazi, sadly, the FBI would cover it up. Mm. I mean, that's the absolute truth.
Now, in regards to this, obviously, you know, there's a what they call denial in government. Well, we deny we even heard of this. You know, you're saying we did. People know these files existed. That question has been asked the State Department. Have they given any definitive answer?
No. I mean, they've released about two-thirds of the Nazi files under intense pressure by Congress. And those files confirm what I've been saying. About one-third of the Nazi files are still classified because they came from the British government. And under a secret treaty that Congress doesn't even know about, the British imposed a 75-year rule on their files. So we'll start to read about the British files and the Holocaust and stuff starting in about 2015 through 2025. And I think people will be shocked that there is so much more to learn about World War II and the Holocaust and the Cold War. It's buried in our own State Department intelligence files that, you know, has never been released. I did go through those files, and I know what's in there.
You know, there's been incredible controversy over the role of Pope Pius XII, who had ascended the throne of Peter in 1939, was the wartime pope. Many people claim that he should have excommunicated the Nazis. There was a tremendous amount of Nazis that came out of Austria, a tremendous amount of Catholics who, Austria is about 98-99% Catholic, who were members of illegal and criminal organizations like the SS and, you know, etc.
Yeah. Oh, I'm an Irish Catholic, but I'm very opposed to Pius XII because I read his secret files. Mm. And against pressure from the CIA, I wrote a book called Unholy Trinity, the Vatican, the Nazis, and the Swiss Banks, that definitively documented how Pius XII established the mechanism for moving fugitive Nazi war criminals and Nazi flight capital out of Europe after World War II.
Now, you know, we know, it's prima facie that tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Catholic officials, priests, nuns, brothers, were murdered by the Nazis. Murdered. We know
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely.
We know that. They were picked on, and aside from the fact that Hitler was a fallen away Catholic, he was born as a Catholic in Linz, Austria, as I said, what was the Catholic Church's fear? Was it communism? So much a fear to them that they were able to and want to make a pact with the devil over this?
It was partly that. It was partly pressure from the American investors who wanted to use the Vatican Bank to move their money out. It was partly that the Pope was pro-German. He was the Vatican's ambassador to Germany and met with Hitler. And even his own confidant, a nun that he kept as housekeeper, admitted that Pius, as a young ambassador, personally handed over Vatican money to Hitler.
Well, and of course, he created and wrote the Concordat, which established literally a relationship between Rome in an authoritative way and Nazi Germany, almost recognizing Nazi Germany with the Concordat, which established a parity between Catholics and Protestants, Lutherans, more or less, in Germany, and gave them the same rights as Lutherans. And basically, the Catholics gave up their right to run for office and be involved in politics in Germany for that trade, you know, that kind of trade. And there is no doubt that Pacelli, that was his name, as a young prelate and bishop, was influenced by German politics. But it's fascinating to me that, you know, with all the blood on the hands of everyone, there wasn't a sense of guilt. How do you see that as a Catholic and an investigator in speaking to these people?
Well, there was a sense of guilt. One of the Vatican historians of the Holocaust was a guy who shipped files and secrets to me via a mutual friend, and he was terribly ashamed of what had happened. Mm. A future pope, John the 23rd, wonderful man, issued a prayer, you know, asking for forgiveness for what the church had done to the Jews. And during World War II, he ran around handing out Catholic baptismal certificates to Jews until Pius XII made him stop.
Mm, crazy. Very unfortunate. And, of course, there's a movement to make him a saint. And, of course, that seems to be moving on. You know, in our final minutes, you have written extensively about Nazi infiltration in the Arab Middle East and how it has affected the Muslim Brotherhood. There have been also revelations about the Grand Mufti. We know of Jerusalem, his connection to Nazi Germany during World War II. How dangerous is this connection with the Nazis to Muslim Brotherhood? And is there a connection between Arab Nazi influence and money to radical Islamic factions in the United States?
This is the real horror story. And for 30 years, I've been forbidden to speak about it because of my security clearances. 30 years are up. There were Arab Nazis. The Muslim Brotherhood was funded as by the Third Reich as their intelligence arm to build an Arab Nazi army of 750,000 people during World War II. After the war, the British Secret Service hid the Arab Nazis in Egypt. When the Dulleses came to power, the British sold the Arab Nazis to the Americans, and Dulles moved the Muslim Brotherhood, the Arab Nazi movement. He moved them from Egypt to Saudi Arabia. The Saudis gave the Arab Nazis jobs as school teachers. So young men like Osama bin Laden were literally educated by Mohammed Qutb, the brother of the chief Nazi propagandist in the Arab Nazi movement. So the original Arab Nazi group, the Muslim Brotherhood, is still in existence. It has a second generation of Arab Nazis who combine the worst Islamic heresy. And the Saudi Arabian religion, Wahhabism, has been declared a heresy more than 60 times by Islamic scholars. So we had a perfect storm of Saudi religious bigotry and Nazi racism. The Muslim Brotherhood then became the founding organization of all of the Sunni terrorist groups that exist today and some of the Shiite terrorist groups. It is the most dangerous organization. It's far more dangerous than the Nazi Party was in America before World War II, because their infiltration is better, their propaganda is better. I exposed one of their leaders here in Florida, Samuel Arian, who was posing as a professor who loved Jews and, you know, Christians and Brotherhood, and he was one of the world leaders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a major terrorist organization.
Yeah, you know, this is something that must come out. We must be educated on this. We must understand it. I don't believe it's an issue of the right or the left, but I think it's an American issue. I think it's an American issue of what really is what we're about. And I know we have a tendency to believe our own propaganda, and people have to look in the mirror and see what we're really about. I want to thank you, John Loftus, for joining me today. By the way, where can we get your books, and is there another project you're working on?
My last book is called America's Nazi Secret. It's by Trine Day Publishers. You can order it at any bookstore. And I am working on a few projects, but I'm going to wait until the movie comes out.
Good. Very good. I look forward to it, and I look forward to reading your stuff. Thank you again. If you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocate broadcasts, you can access some on my website, advocates-wvox.com, where information on my guests will be posted. You can also get links to John Loftus's articles and books and find out where they're available. Next week, my guest will be the noted historian, world-renowned expert on the Middle East, and frequent contributor to the Advocates. Professor Michael Curtis will be talking about his book, Should Israel Exist? And the Christian Plight in the Arab Middle East. We'll have a great day. See you next week. And thank you again, John Loftus, for joining us. Thank you.